Coach, how are you today?
Doing okay, Glenn. How about you?
We're doing fine.
Fred, Coach, Steve, how are you guys fine. Doing?
Doing well.
Doing terrific. They're never pretty anymore, but you get a win. You get a win out in the road, a quality against a very good football team. You're 5-1. Got to feel pretty good.
Well, we'll take it. Yeah, we'll take it. Chargers are a good football team. They have a lot of really good players. I thought everybody could definitely see yesterday how quickly things can turn around with them. They can score in a hurry. Onside kick, make a stop on defense, score again. So they're a very explosive team and very dangerous, and they showed that. So fortunately, we were able to just make a few more plays than they did yesterday and come out on top. So we'll take it. Wasn't perfect. We got a lot of work to do. Still a lot of things we can correct, but it's good to be correcting them from a victory instead of a close loss.
We said that last week. We kind of like, yeah, right, Bill, when you said number one defense, number one offense. We hadn't seen them that much. But they really had some players that can get after on defense, and it seemed like it was louder there than normal, and those corner guy rushes were getting off the ball really quickly. Was it louder than normal, and what kind of cadence were you using?
Well, it was loud. It's always loud, and as you know, it gets louder when things are going good for them. So when we played out there 2 years ago and they were ahead 17-3 and 24-3, your head was just felt like you had two cymbals being smashed against it. And certainly in the fourth quarter there when they were mounting their comeback and they had some momentum and fans got back into it, it was loud. It was interesting, though, earlier in the game, when a couple of times when I was over talking to the defense, making adjustments to them on the sideline, I would hear the crowd yell, and I thought, uh-oh, what happened? And it was when we made a good play.
There's quite a lot of Patriot fans.
There were quite a few Patriot fans, and there was that point in the game where I think the Charger fans didn't have too much to cheer about, and they were kind of quiet, but it definitely wasn't the case at the end of the game. But, no, there was definitely good crowd noise, and they have good edge rushers. You know, Phillips and Barnes certainly helped them there, and, you know, coming in, and, you know, if you're just a little bit late off the count on a guy like that, they can really get around there in a hurry. So it was certainly a little bit of a factor.
The offense did not seem real productive in the first half, though they had opportunities given to them by the defense. In the second half, you seemed to go a little bit more no huddle. You quicked up the pace of your offense. Was that to wear that defense down or to prevent them from getting certain packages out there on the field?
Well, I think both. To kind of control their personnel substitutions and also to pick up our pace. And fortunately, there were some good plays in there in that drive, and that always helps you pick up the pace when you're going forward and gaining some yards. So it's a combination of all those things. But it's a little easier to control their substitutions when you're not substituting and you just have to see what they're putting out there and how you want to match up against it.
Were you anticipating that onside kick with 7.5 minutes left?
Well, we definitely thought it was a possibility, and we alerted them for it, and we played, you know, we were playing for it, but not, we didn't have our hands team out there because with 7 minutes to go and two scores, there's still plenty of time to kick off deep, back you up, get the ball back. But it was a good kick, and we didn't play it as well as we would like to have played it, obviously. And so I think, you know, going forward, we're going to have to, you know, take a look at that, you know, from a coaching standpoint. It's the second time that's happened this year now. Mm-hmm. So we've really got to maybe work on that. Not that we haven't worked on it, but, you know, work on that, our whole setup there a little bit more.
Seems teams are doing it early in games now. You know, you're seeing it in the first half of some games. It's amazing.
Yeah, but the down by a score, two scores in the fourth quarter, you know, that's a tough one because you don't want to put your hands team up there and then let them kick it deep and they get you on the 15-yard line. And, you know, now you're in bad field position and they get the ball back and, you know, they're knocking on the door again. And on the other hand, you don't want to have what happened. Does happen. So but having the ball on a 15-yard line is better than recovering it in the field.
Is that Brown's MO? He's a pretty good onside kick guy. I mean, he hit the top of that ball, bounced straight up in the air.
Yeah, he is a good onside kicker, and not sure exactly what he was trying to do on that first one, but he's onside kicked both ways. So he the first one that
trying to pooch that Dane, something maybe, or
I don't know, pooch it or spin it back there or whatever, but I don't think he got exactly whatever he was trying to get, but then the second one that he spiked into the ground, that was obviously an excellent kick, came down right at the 10-yard mark, and they got it. So, but you know, we had to be alert for both sides, not just that kick, but the other one that they used earlier in the game, and then of course after that, then they used the pooch kick, the one that went out of bounds, and tried to, I think, hope that we would be up, you know, playing for the onside kick and then, you know, pooch it over the top and you know, be able to have the ball, you know, in that dead spot back there behind the front line and in front of the returners.
While we're on the special teams, Jake Ingram had a tough day snapping yesterday. Was there anything in particular he was doing or something San Diego?
Snapping them low.
Yeah, I saw. I noticed.
You and I have both been there, Steve.
Yes, we have.
Steve's broken them down for us already. Yeah.
Do you need a 350-pound snapper?
Hey, shut up.
No, Glenn's available.
You're just
all right, on the fourth down play, was part of the snapping, the poor snapping, did that play into your decision on that particular play?
No, not really. No, that was just I felt like that was a situation where we could we had that situation two other times in the game. One was a fourth and two that we punted. I think it was in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And then we had a fourth and one that we went for and picked up in the third quarter, I think it was. So, but I felt we would be okay with the play that we had called. It did, obviously didn't work out, and it could have. You know, I need to do a better job in that situation with the plays and the decisions and all that. You know, when you go for those, you got to pick them up, and we didn't. So we gotta find a better way to.
Well, there, you're not doubting yourself with the fourth and one, are you? You're talking about the play specifically.
Well, just the whole. You know, when you do that, it needs to work. Right. So we gotta find a way to make it work.
Is that still the number one thing? Because we've gone over this so many times over the years.
Well, if you don't think it's gonna work, then you only do it when it's desperation and you have no other choice.
The point I was trying to get to is, in your mind, the play is the most important thing in that situation. Whether you've got a play that can absolutely work, correct?
In that kind of situation, yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you just have to do it because you're not gonna get the ball back if you don't score. So then you gotta go with whether you want to do it or not. You don't have any choice.
Well, the first thing that everybody was screaming about was last year's fourth and two compared to this fourth and one. How were they different? How were they the same, the thought process of making the call?
The Indy game.
Well, our field position was better, and the yardage were shorter. Yep. Those would be the two main differences.
Now, did they guess?
Time of the game didn't matter. The San Diego
time
offense.
Time of the game is about the same.
About the same.
Right? Wasn't it about the two-minute warning in Indy? About the same.
Yeah.
Now, did San Diego just guess right? They seem to have more guys in that area than you could block.
Well, they obviously played the ball play better than we executed it. So, you know, give them credit, and they made that play.
The lateral that went behind that Rivers threw, was it a huge benefit that it happened right there on your sideline? Because your coaching staff, and it seemed like Pepper was up and screaming. And the other point about that, and I know you've seen the film here today, Brandon Spikes did a smart thing by taking the guy out as opposed to going for the ball, seeing that Ninkovich was picking the ball up, and that seemed to give him that extra 20 yards or whatever he ended up with.
Yeah, he ended up with about 60 on it.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but no, it was. You know, Rob alertly got on the ball, although maybe it could have been a little quicker. It could have been quicker, but he got on the ball and then was alert enough to get up and start running. And as you said, Spikes got him started. Vince blocked, made a block there, and then, you know, Rivers kind of had the angle on him and pushed him out of bounds. But, you know, it's kind of similar to a play that we watched the night before the game in the Oakland game where Oakland was up by one at the end of the game. Rivers got hit just as he was throwing. Was it a forward pass? Was it a fumble? Oakland scooped it up, ran it in for a touchdown, and so it ended up being an 8-point win for them. But had they not gotten that play, San Diego would have been down by one with 50 seconds to go and maybe 30 yards outside of field goal range. So, you know, very, very makeable situation for them. So that was the kind of thing that we had talked about before, about just getting on those loose balls and playing them out, and don't worry about what the whistle is because it doesn't matter. Just get on the ball and get a hold of it, and, you know, ask questions later. So that kind of worked in our favor on that one, and also in the, you know, on the one that James recovered.
Well, you just talked about it before we went on the air. You said you were taught, and everybody's taught, to play to the whistle, and now that no longer exists. You just keep on playing beyond the whistle.
Well, you play to a possession of the ball.
Right.
If the ball's loose, you play to possession of the ball. The whistle means nothing. As long, you know, if the ball's loose. Now, if the runner has possession of the ball, then once the whistle blows, then, you know, you can't hit them and all that. But if the ball's loose, then you play till possession of the ball. The whistle doesn't mean anything. That's right.
Now, in the second half, because of the large lead at one point, you seem to go more to a deeper zone, let them throw underneath you. In the first half, you've seen a little bit more blitz. Did it change at all?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, no.
Because it was a lot of times he had opportunities to throw the ball underneath it.
Yeah, he had a lot of opportunities to do that in the first half, too. Yeah,
there wasn't any change in blitzing. No. He blitzed more in the first half.
No.
the hitting, the physical aspect of the game. Brandon Merriweather seemed as physical as he was last week, but he seemed to adjust and use the shoulder and drop down a little bit. That fair to say?
He didn't get the penalty that he got last week. Absolutely. Right. So,
but does that really matter? Because they could fine him anyway, correct? Because they change the rule as this thing moves on.
Right. Well, we've always tried to instruct the players to use the techniques that are within the rules. And look, a lot of players have been penalized for hits that are not within the rules, and you try to correct those, and they try to correct them and do them right. You know, they're bang-bang plays. They're fast. You're chasing a guy. You're trying to get him, and all of a sudden something happens, and, you know, you don't want to hit him illegally, but you're trying to hit him and make the play. So it's a fine line there. I think everybody understands what the rule is. I think they understood it before last week. I think they understand it now, and, you know, maybe they're a little more conscious of it now, but, there's no new rule. Nothing's changed. It's just... Well, maybe there's a little more emphasis on it, which I understand that, but I think from a coaching standpoint, a teaching standpoint, you know, we do it the same way that we've always done it. So,
did you have any concern that maybe it would affect a player like that, that maybe he would back off a little bit and not be as physical? Because he seemed to be quite physical in this game.
I really didn't get that sense, Glenn, no. No. I mean, Brandon's a pretty experienced player. I mean, kid's played a lot of football and played at a very high level in college and, you know, now for, you know, his career here in the NFL. So, you know, I think when you talk to players, you know, Fred, Steve, you guys all go through your career, there's times where you make adjustments in the way you do things, whether it's a technique or a rule or a scheme that is when you go to a new team or your team changes that, you make adjustments, and that's what players do. So I think experienced players can handle that.
They took the clothesline out, and most people didn't have a
problem.
They
took your weapon out, the head slap. Couldn't slap it.
Punching in the ribs out, all that stuff's nasty.
Yeah, so you adjust.
Hey, did they change the way they run defense? I mean, they ran a lot of more dropping coverage off than opposed to pass rushing because they're rushing 3 and 4. Did they blitz less this time and drop more against the offense?
I would say that in the games that we've broken down prior to yesterday, they'd shown more zone blitz than what they showed against us. Yes, I mean, we saw a little more man coverage probably statistically than what they had shown coming into our game. They had shown it, but we just, you know, they had a little more of it.
Was that a factor of not having that obvious deep threat of Randy Moss? Were they able to do more things with that receiving core than before?
Again, I don't think they had any new coverages, Steve. Let's say they ran what they ran, mm-hmm. but let's say a little more cover one and maybe a little less split zone, which those two are pretty similar anyway, but it's a little less five-man rush and a little more four-man rush.
Looking back at the film, was there things you saw there, receivers that were open, or was the coverage pretty much blanket? Because a bunch of times you stood back, it didn't look like he saw anything.
Yeah, I'd say a combination of both. I'd say at times we had some receivers open that we didn't get the ball to at other times. And times we had some receivers that were open and we didn't have time to get the ball to them. There are other times when there really wasn't much there and our protection was good, or sometimes it wasn't as good. So it was a combination of things. Yeah, I'd say it was a combination of things. Again, they're a pretty good defensive football team, and they do a lot of things well. They rush well, they cover well, and they mix their coverages up. Again, hopefully we could improve our execution on it. But, I mean, still, they're a good defense. They're going to give everybody problems like they have all year.
And they have Sproles returning kicks, and did a pretty good job of getting down on him because he can scoot.
Right. He got us on that last kickoff return where he bounced it outside and got back to about the 30-yard line or something like that. But, you know, he's tough. He's really a good runner and very fast and a small guy that sometimes gets kind of lost in that pile there behind the wedge. It's a little hard to sometimes pick him out, but he's very good and dangerous and you know, fortunately, there weren't any big breakout plays by him, but he's very challenging.
Any update on Patrick Chung's injury?
Steve, I think they're still looking at it, and you know how it goes, the day after the game, a couple days after the game, until kind of the adrenaline, you know, comes out and things settle down. So we'll see how it goes there. But, you know, Patrick's a pretty tough kid. He seems like a pretty fast healer, so hopefully it won't be, you know, won't hold him out too long, if at all.
I know last week we talked about Dedrick and the fact that we were kind of surprised he was out there starting. And again, it looked like he came up with a couple of big plays during the course of this game. How quickly is he picking this up, Bill?
Well, I think Brandon had a good training camp, pretty good preseason, and just the way things fell early in the season, the first couple of weeks, he didn't get a lot of opportunity, but he's worked hard in practice and continued to show up. And then when he's had an opportunity to play, he's shown up positively and has made some plays that give more opportunity and have been encouraging. So he had a couple of those yesterday, and not all perfect, but some things that were good. And so I feel like, you know, all five of those defensive linemen yesterday, Brandon and Vince, Gerard Warren, Mike Wright, Myron, you know, all five of them gave us good positive plays in different times, different situations, but they all played, you know, roughly about the same amount of time, not quite exactly, but, you know, they all had significant roles and they all were productive in them, so it was good. You know, Brandon Dietrich did a good job.
Now, Vin's playing on the outside. Is that going to be more of a permanent position? Seems to be holding up that end so they can't collapse that side in?
Well, I think we have confidence in Vince really at any position, whether he's over the tackle, the guard, or the center, and whichever side it is. So, depending on what the scheme is and who we're playing and the matchups and so forth, what we're trying to do, I think really wherever we've asked him to play, he's always been very willing to make that adjustment and has always done it well. So if that's something we want to do, we can do it. And if it's not, then whether it's on the nose or at a three technique or at end, I think that he'll play well in whichever position he's at.
Do you make that decision based on the matchup on the other side? Is that what you're looking at?
Well, I'd say it's a combination of things, Len, between what they're doing, who their personnel is, and what we're trying to do. Sometimes there's a reason for, based on what we're trying to do, where we might rather have one player here or there. But all three of those guys are pretty, really all of our defensive linemen are pretty versatile. You know, Mike's played in all three spots. Warren's played in all three spots. Wilfork's played in all three spots. Dederick has played on both ends and actually played some on the nose and one technique at Alabama at times. So he's kind of versatile in there too. So, I mean, they've all been able to move around, and I think we have confidence in that.
Now, Warren, he was a defensive tackle, and he didn't play. Did he play nose prior to this when he was in it with the other team?
Well, he usually played in the over and under defense schemes, whether it was at Cleveland, Denver, or Oakland. And so when it was a three technique, then he would, you know, play out there almost on the tackle. And when it was a one technique, he, you know, be on the center. So he's really played all three spots, but not in a 3-4 defense and a 4-3 defense.
Does it surprise you what he has left? I mean, he seems to be playing pretty well, moves decently, holds
up
the run.
Again, he's had a real good season. He was good in the spring, had a good training camp, showed up in the preseason games. You know, he's a big physical guy that's hard to block. He's explosive, and he's very athletic for his size. He plays on his feet, and he has good balance, and he has some quickness, can rush the passer, and, you know, be effective in space. So, I mean, for a big man, he's athletic, and, you know, he's a smart player and has a lot of experience. So he's done a good job for us.
Was a defensive lineman, speaks for itself.
That's all he
hottest
needs.
Position to learn, Steve.
I would imagine,
wow.
Yeah, because they're all the dumbest. Wow. Anyway, speaking of intelligent players, how are Cunningham and Spikes doing 6 games into their rookie season?
You know, they're getting better each week, Steve. You know, I think Jermaine's really, the last 2-3 weeks, has really started to come on. And, you know, he missed that time in training camp. And so his early preseason games here are kind of like his preseason games that other guys have had. But I think he's, you know, he's a physical player, and his physical play is starting to show up more against tackles and tight ends and, you know, the people that he's going up against, and he's playing with power and explosiveness. And Spikes is a good football player. He's just instinctive. He knows where the ball is, and he's good in the running game with his run reads. He's made some plays for us on kickoff coverage. You know, both those guys have a lot to learn. They see a lot of things that they just haven't seen in college. So it's each week's a new learning experience for them. But I think their ability to play physically, to take people on, to tackle, to hold their own and defeat blockers, that those things are good, and now they just continue to refine their techniques and learn their responsibilities, particularly in the passing game. That's the hardest thing for really all rookies is the NFL passing game. The running game's a lot more familiar to them from what they are, and closer to what they did in college. Passing games, it's a whole new ball game.
All right, fifth win of the season. Minnesota comes to town, and I think there's a guy you might be familiar with that'll be part of that team. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll break down the Vikings coming to town this week with the coach, Bill Belichick.
Try eating, reading, or watching TV on a stationary. you can raise your head and or feet to different levels. Or if you choose, lay it flat. Very versatile.
And now, for the first time ever, my Power Bob adjustable bed, complete with my Bobopedic 8 memory foam mattress, is only $9.99 in full or queen size.
If I already have a full or queen size bed and I want to keep it?
No problem. My Power Bob will stand alone or fit any existing standard size bed. My expert delivery people will install it and even take away your old mattress set.
Your price is untouchable. Tempur-Pedic's is $1,700 more.
Theirs is $26.99, and my Power Bob with Bobopedic 8 is only $9.99. I guarantee you'll sleep just as well on mine.
Even better when you save $1,700.
Buy it at My Bob's Discount Furniture or online at mybobs.com.
This is Teddy Bruschi.
And I'm Heidi Bruschi.
When I played football, there were teammates we always counted on when we needed them most. Like those who always gave us great coverage on defense. After my life took an unexpected turn, Heidi and I realized we needed someone who had our team at home covered if something happened again.
That's why we called SBLI, the no-nonsense life insurance company. Our children mean everything to us, and they're growing up fast. Every day, they're moving closer to their dreams. That's why it's so important to have someone our family can count on, no matter what.
With SBLI, we know our team at home is covered for life. Make sure yours is, too.
A very healthy 40-year-old can get a 20-year, $500,000 term policy for about a dollar a day. Call 888-GET-SBLI or visit SBLI.com. That's 888-GET-SBLI. For policy specifics, visit SBLI.com/commercials. The Savings Bank Life Insurance Company of Massachusetts.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Sir, would you take a survey for Dunkin' Donuts to help us build a premium breakfast sandwich?
Shoot.
Which of the following would you rather have? Delicious maple sausage.
That.
Fluffy egg.
Yes.
Aged cheddar.
That too.
Or a fresh croissant.
All of the above.
Get all the premium taste you want with the maple cheddar breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Now for a limited time. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
For instant access to New England Patriots football anywhere, anytime, go to ESPNBoston.com. Boston Sports Center keeps you up to date with the latest local news and highlights every day. Plus, Mike Reese and Teddy Bruschi give you inside analysis that only Beantown veterans can provide. For complete coverage of the Patriots and all things Boston sports, go to ESPNBoston.com today.
Join Glenn Ordway and the Water Boys and Girls on Tuesday at Hurricane O'Reilly's in Boston from 2 to 6 p.m. The big show will broadcast live from 2 to 6 leading up to opening night.
Stand by 20 seconds.
The Miami Heat. We'll have great prizes to give away, including a pair of tickets to see the game, but you'll have to come see the show to win. So join the big show on Tuesday at Hurricane O'Reilly's for your chance to win tickets to see Pierce, Allen, KG, and the rest of the C's take on LeBron, Wade, Bosch, and the Miami Heat. Brought to you by Budweiser. It's what we do and the WEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, back live down here in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium. It is Patriots Monday. Glenn Ordway, Freddie Smirla, Steve Diassi, and the coach, Bill Belichick. All right, we've heard everybody describe the last 2 or 3 years how you go out and defend Randy Moss. So, coach, I'll ask you the question. How do you defend Randy Moss?
Well, I think we all know what Randy can do. Problem with the Vikings is they have a lot of players that are really good, you know, a lot of really good skill players. Moss, Harvin, Berrien, Greg Lewis, Shianko, Peterson. It's a terrific back. I mean, he's as good a back as
we're going to see all year.
I don't think so.
Well, he can run.
He's strong, fast. He's really an explosive player. Catches the ball well. So they got a lot of people to worry about. You got to worry about Moss, man. You got to worry about all the rest of them too.
Because you watch games, you know, prior to Moss against the Miami. And Miami beat them, but really Minnesota beat themselves. You know, fumbling in the end zone, you know, getting on the goal line, not getting in. They moved the ball and had opportunities. They shot themselves in the foot. You can't rely on that. They can move the ball effectively, and probably, like you said, on offense, they can hit you from all different angles.
Oh, they can score in a hurry. Now, Peterson goes a different distance, Harvin, Moss, Shanko. I mean, those guys can all, you know, 60, 70, 80 yards. They can get it in a hurry.
You've seen enough of Brett Favre over the years. Is he still totally unpredictable in that you see him do some stuff that you, because he's doing a lot of it on the fly when stuff breaks down, that you're sitting there going, you know, why didn't we do this or why didn't we do that? How difficult is he? And that he just doesn't seem to follow the straight logic.
Right. Well, he improvises a lot, and that's, you know, that's hard to defend because you like you said, just don't know what he's going to do. He'll throw it across his body, back across the field. He'll sling it down the field when probably there's a better place to throw underneath. And so he'll run, and he can buy time in the pocket. So he does a lot of things that are unpredictable, really forces you to play disciplined defense, or if you try to, you know, get into a guessing game with him, he'll find some space, and you won't have anybody to defend it, and you'll be in trouble.
You know, we talk about the offense, but that defense is loaded with some plays too.
Well, they sure are. They're good up front. Their linebackers are very athletic, and they're a good coverage team in the secondary. They're physical. They play a lot of zone coverage, and they hit you hard, but they can also lock up and play in man coverage. Certainly, you know, Winfield's a quality corner. I mean, we know him from Buffalo and in previous meetings in Minnesota. I mean, he's probably one of the best tackling, best tacklers in the league at his position, and is an excellent cover guy that can play both outside and in the slot, so. They're good, no question about it. They're strong in all three phases of the game, special teams. I mean, they're very physical there too. You know, guys like Farwell, you know, is probably the top special teams player in football over the last 3 or 4 years in terms of production. They're solid. Percy Harvin, great kickoff returner. So they're tough.
How about the front four that, you know, they've been so good for? I was shocked yesterday to find out that Pat Williams is 38 years of age and still playing well.
Get in the league when he's 30.
But shocked.
Well, he's a big, strong run player.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he does a really good job in there in the running game. He's a hard guy to move and takes up a lot of space and, commands a couple blockers. And Kevin Williams is very athletic as a three technique, and he has great, you know, range and quickness. And, of course, you got Allen and Edwards outside who have great motors and can really crank it off the edge, but, you know, are also strong physical guys that are hard to knock off the ball. So it's a very good front, and they roll a couple other guys in there in some sub passing situations for Pat, but it's a strong group. They're physical, they're athletic, they're quick, and they're a hard group to block. And by the time you get through them, it's hard to get up to the linebackers. You know, those guys are, you know, they're fast, they run well. Henderson, Lieber, and that group, and Greenway, and so it's hard to get a hat on them without leaving those linemen too early and singling them up. So it's kind of puts a lot of pressure on your offense to get them all blocked. But it's hard, like I said, it's hard to leave those linemen to go block those linebackers when they're penetrating the line of scrimmage and getting in the backfield.
There's a report out just now that Brett Favre has two fractures in his left ankles and a protective boot right now. Does that change? They haven't ruled out whether he's going to play or not, but does that change any of your preparation for the week?
Well, not until they rule him out, no, Steve. No. I mean, he's started 5,000 games in a row. This is like Lou Gehrig. So,
cracks are from 5 years.
We heard the same thing about Gates last week. You know, yeah. He wasn't going to play and all that, and but he played pretty well, and he hasn't missed any games either. So, you know, right. I think when you have players like that, those guys find a way to play. Mm-hmm. And until they're on the inactive list, we'll prepare for them. We'll prepare for all the players on the roster. And whichever ones are active, whichever ones the Vikings decide to play, then those are the ones we have to be ready for. We can't, you know, guess at those and then guess wrong, and then those players show up and play, and then, you know, we're not prepared for them. We've got to be ready for all of them.
It's like dogs. They put wheels on them, you know, and they just send them right back out there. Yeah. But you're right. If anybody is apt to be playing on Sunday's game, it's him. I would think it would be very difficult for coaching staff to sit there and veer away, since the guy seems to show up and he's had this, you know, he's had these injuries. We were talking about it before the show today. He couldn't even get off the podium last night. We all looked at each other and said, "He'll be playing Sunday."
Yeah, he hasn't missed a game in 20 years, and you're saying, "Well, okay, this is the one he's going to miss." Well, all right, but
good luck.
Yeah, let's not rush it.
We spent a lot of film time on Tavares Jackson.
Right. Going back to the defensive line for a minute, they're not a big blitzing team. They rely on that front for cover, for pressure.
They blitz some, but no, I mean they really count on the four man rush, and they usually get enough pressure off that they don't have to blitz. They can, you know, blitz when they want to, when they feel that it's advantageous. But they're a good pass rushing team without anybody else coming.
When would that be? When they feel a third and real long,
just to mix it up, just to keep you off balance, so that you're not always getting them off. I mean, one thing about blitzing linebackers is it forces your backs to, generally, your backs to step up and pick those guys up, which then keeps the backs from chipping the ends and, you know, being a second blocker for those outside rushers, you know, particularly Allen. A lot of teams try to get an extra, get their back outside and help the tackle and bump him on his way out. But if he's got blitz pickup, then he's got to block that guy, and then the tackle's singled up. So there's some advantages to that.
How different are they with Randy Moss? And I know they've gone through it with Rice and different guys that they've lost during the course of the year. In looking at them over the last couple of weeks since Randy's been with them, have you noticed them doing anything differently?
Well, I'd say the big thing when Moss is on the field is you've got him on the outside, which is a problem, and then you have Shanko and Harvin on the inside, which is a problem, and then you have Peterson in the backfield, which is another problem. So, you know, there's a lot of fronts to defend. You got to be careful about getting all your coverage out there on those receivers, because, you know, Peterson can make a lot of yards, and you got to be careful about gearing up to stop Peterson when you got Harvin and Moss and Shanko out there running through the defense. So they're well balanced. They use them all. As fast as Randy is, and we all know how fast Randy is, it looks like Percy Harvin's as fast as Randy is. So he's not the only fast guy they got out there.
Have they used Randy any differently than you guys use him over the years?
Well, they used him on that reverse, that reverse pass, whatever it was, against the Jets. So
he threw right.
Yeah. So we haven't, we didn't use him there. But no, I mean, I think Randy's obviously an outstanding player, very capable of doing a lot of different things. I mean, he's not just a deep receiver; he can run all sorts of routes. Very good in the red area. So big target, good hands. So there's a lot of things they can do with him, and they've utilized him.
Any concern about a team? You face a team that, you know, back up against the wall, they're put in a corner, the must-win situations. Does any of that factor into what you tell your team?
Well, that's what we faced this week.
Yeah.
You know, that was San Diego. You know, they were 2-4 and playing at home. And, they've been a slow-starting team, but have won the last 4 years, 12 out of 14, 12 in a row.
Right.
Division, all that, and this. So, we know Minnesota's dangerous. I mean, they're within a play of beating the Jets. They're within a play of beating the Packers. They're within a play of, probably being 5-1. So they've been, right there in a lot of games, and just one or two plays away from, winning those games. And they could easily, have the same record probably they had last year at this point in time. So we just gotta respect that and play it one play at a time, and have a good week of preparation here. But we know what they're capable of. We're gonna have to play well, and we're gonna have to not make any bad mistakes. Give up deep balls, turn the ball over, cover kicks. Do all those things well, and try to keep it competitive.
All right, time right now for the coach's question of the week. It's brought to you by AutoTrader.com. Compare new and used cars side by side at AutoTrader.com, the ultimate automotive marketplace and proud partner of Patriots football. Fred's been working on this one all week, Bill.
Isn't it me three times in a row, Bill?
No, it hasn't been.
Hasn't. We're rotating.
You just get nervous, so it feels like it.
Right. Just give me the Vonquin mind look. Bill, considering how well you know Randy and how well he knows you guys, is there any type of twist you can put in there to try and confuse him, or a look that he hasn't seen, or would be something that would catch him off guard?
I think, Fred, this is more of a game of execution than it is some kind of gadget thing that they've never seen before. I mean, Randy's seen every coverage that I think that you could put on him out there. It's a lot of cases, I think he knows how the defense should play it better than the defense does, because he's seen so many of them, and he's been double covered his whole career. So I don't really think it's about that. I think it's you know, about really playing good technique, about whoever's covering, whoever it is, whether you're covering Randy Moss or Percy Harvin or Shanko, whoever it is, of covering the routes that you have to cover, using your help, whatever that happens to be, from your safeties, your linebackers, or whatever it is, and trying to make those throws as tight and as tough as possible. And that's the best way to, you know, to cover any receiver, is take away the routes that you can take away, and the ones you can't, try to push those to where your help is, and your help needs to do a good job of giving you that help and being where they're supposed to be. And if all that ties in with the pass rush, where the quarterback's got to get rid of the ball in time, and you have those routes covered when he really wants to throw the ball, then it breaks down. So I think that's usually the way it is. I think that's the way it'll be this week. And, you know, Randy's tough to deal with. But, again, they all are. So they have a great group of receivers. They have a quality group.
It's actually a very good question, Fred. You know how it works around here.
Thanks,
we're going to have a lot of hype about Randy coming back here, and that's going to be what we do, what the media does, what the fans do.
Really?
We do a little bit of that, Bill.
The master of the obvious.
If you've noticed, yeah. We do. Do you have to worry about your players at all in getting so ramped up to go up against the guy who was a friend, a guy who was a teammate? And that you just rattled it off, and you're right. You look at a lot of other weapons on this Minnesota team that the guys get so ramped up towards Randy that they don't execute and do what they're supposed to do against everybody else.
Well, I think we go through that every week. There's players on every team that have either played with us, or we have guys that have played with them and all that. I think that's kind of normal in the National Football League. You see that on a pretty frequent basis. But, no, I mean, you know, guys change teams. That's part of the National Football League. You know, I think the big thing is just our football team, you know, understanding what we need to do to win against this opponent, the Vikings. We're not playing one man, Randy Moss. We're playing our whole football team. And it's not really what he does. What he does is important, but it's what their team does and what our team does. And that's the way we'll approach this game, is what we need to do as a football team to, you know, to beat the Vikings. And it'll be a lot, but there'll be some very specific things, and some will include him, and, you know, some won't.
Do you surprised they don't feature Peterson more? I mean, they put the other kid in and they go to the air, but he seems to, every time he touches the ball, you hold your breath that he's going to break it.
Well, he's very dangerous. But again, they all are. Harvin's dangerous. You know, they give Harvin a ball, and he goes 40 or 50 yards for a touchdown on speed sweeps and draws and tear screens and 90 yards on kickoff returns and things like that. So they have a lot of guys that can kill you, and I think that's what they try to do, is, you know, move the ball around, make you defend all of them, and try to create space for those guys. And they each have their opportunities and get their shots and force you defensively to worry about every single guy, not just try to stop one.
All right, Coach. Congratulations.
Thanks, Coach.
Six down, five in the left-handed column. Game 7 coming up. We'll talk to you Monday after it.
Okay, sounds
have
good.
Have a good week.
All right. Thank
Bill Belichick right here on Patriots Monday in the Big Show. We're right back right after this.